Hello, David Hurley here, and you are listening to a special brown face edition of the Hurley Burley's election coverage. Thanks for listening in. No long-winded intro today. First of all, I've got a cold, and second of all, this election seems to have changed last night, and we're going to get right to it. We are recording this about 16 hours after the first of the brown face and black face photos emerged featuring Prime Minister Trudeau, and we are recording this immediately after his news conference. And so this is our hottest of hot takes today. With me are regular panelists Scott Reed and Jenny Byrne, both of them campaign leaders who have seen and dealt with everything, or maybe as of today, almost everything that's out there. I want to stress at the beginning of this that this is obviously a substantive issue that means a great deal to a lot of people, and this panel was not constituted, nor is it qualified to discuss those issues particularly. But this is also something that's going to have electoral implications, and we are qualified and will talk about those. So I think we're going to really restrict ourselves today to three basic topics. How big is this? How have the leaders handled it to date? And what do the leaders need to do about this going forward? And Jenny, you had a strong view on Twitter yesterday, so maybe I'll start with you. How big a deal is this?
Well, I think it's a very big deal. I think this speaks to the core of what Justin Trudeau has built for himself in terms of what his brand is as a defender of Canadians of diverse backgrounds. He's been very vocal in terms of even criticizing or correcting people. There was a town hall meeting where he was asked a very polite question and a woman ended it by saying, you know, we want to do good for mankind. And he, you know, cut her off and said people kind in a very condescending way. So I think where this goes is I think what I tweeted last night was if this was a candidate in a riding for any party, regardless of what political party they're from, they would be gone. There would be no discussion. They would have been fired. They would have been roundly criticized by their own party, and we would be moved on.
So there's no doubt that he is cutting himself more slack than he cuts other people.
100%.
And that's a dissonance when he's standing up there and doing that, for sure.
100%.
But isn't that always true of leaders, to be honest? I mean, what leaders do operate by a different standard, right?
I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this. At least I can't say in Canadian politics that we've ever dealt with anything like this. And we've all dealt with major issues. We've all dealt with issues where we're up till, you know, dawn trying to deal with it. The three of us have all been the source of leading off, you know, national news stories ourselves. But I don't think there's ever been anything quite like this. Like this was this is a leader who now has stood up and said he was sorry in a very long press conference today. And by the end of it was back to lecturing Canadians about how we all need to do better.
Okay. Scott, well, how big a deal is it?
It's a very big deal. I don't mean by that that it is a determinative deal on the election's outcome. Like, I just don't know the answer to that. And I don't think anyone does. I think people who say, well, this is what this means for October 21st is full of shit. But it has the potential to be enormously explosive. You look at this and you say, all right, now all campaigns are immediately challenged. Fundamentally, the prime minister has to talk about how does he respond to this on a whole variety of levels, right? And we saw him apologize and we saw him again just a few minutes ago going to a much lengthier apology where he tried to talk about, you know, exactly what was inside his head, where he's shifted his views on this, how he wants to reconcile those things. But then on the other campaigns have to figure out what's their tone, what's the right temperature for them, and what looks too politically opportunistic versus what looks rooted in a genuine and substantive and authentic objection, all of those things. And again, just to underline the point you made at the outset, right, this is super awkward territory because we can't help but talk about it through a political and electoral lens. But to a lot of people, it's not about politics, and it's not about an election. It's about their goddamn lives. And so that is hard to also calibrate in terms of how does that work its way into the election. My view is this. I think that Trudeau apologized last night in about as stripped down, clean, unqualified way as you could ask. There was no context setting. There was
You're slipping into the second question.
Okay, well, then I'll stop.
All right.
But the big thing How big a deal is it? I think I might express at the outset a heretical view. I think this thing has the potential to be absolutely explosive and game-changing, but I don't think it's going to be. If I had to bet $100 of my own money, I have a feeling that by October 20th, we will be talking about how this issue turned out to not be determinative of the election outcome.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, my feeling is, first of all, that there are at least three different audiences here electorally, and they'll all react, I think, differently, and the issue is going to be different for each of these groups of people. I'll start off by saying I think there's likely among the white population of the country quite a significant age divide that we're likely going to see probably at the millennial point, that there's a significant age divide where white people older than that probably don't see this as that racist or that outrageous a thing to do. And I think those people are unlikely to conclude that Trudeau is a racist as a consequence of having done this. He's too strongly positioned the other way, and they won't see this as that egregious an offense. They may come to use this to see him as a phony or to see him as somebody who judges, has two different standards for himself, but I don't think they're likely to see him as a racist. On the other hand, my sense of, from social media at least, is that the millennial white population does think this is an egregious offense and is reacting significantly differently to it. And then, of course, you've got people of color. And Greg Lyle, a pollster that I respect greatly, says that 25% of Canadian voters say that they face discrimination daily and that that group of voters was the strongest voter base for the Liberal Party before yesterday. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays in that. So I think that I think it is significant because it's such a big deal. But I don't know what its significance is yet. I don't know what it morphs into, and what it ultimately comes to symbolize. And I don't discount the possibility that Trudeau is good enough at this kind of thing and has enough capital on this kind of thing that if he handles it right, and by the way, I don't think he's been doing that so far, that he could actually use it as a bit of a springboard back.
Well, 32 days is a long time. That's how far away we are from Election Day. So I agree with Scott. I think that this could end up being a story that might define the 2019 campaign, but not change the outcome.
How do you think he's weaker right now, as of today? How do you think he's weaker than he was yesterday?
Well, because he's actually been shown as a hypocrite. He's
okay.
Been
so that is what you think is the core vulnerability.
I think he has been shown as a hypocrite. I think that there are people out there that have thought that for a while, but he is now being shown as being very self-righteous, sanctimonious, and he's being seen as a hypocrite. If I can then talk from a political lens in terms of a weakness now that's going to be for their campaign, is you Liberals have been very good at uncovering, lately social media posts, but dredging up skeletons within for candidates within mostly the Conservative Party. I think that right now, and the Liberals had been rolling stuff out for the last 2 weeks, I think that becomes something that they're going to lose the ability to be able to push stuff out against their opponents.
Yeah, and arguably much of the benefit that they derive from those attacks has dissipated in the last 24 hours.
Yes.
It's been pretty damaging from that perspective. Scott, how do you think, let's go to the leaders and how they handled it. Scott, how do you think the Prime Minister has handled this in the, 18 hours since it's happened?
I actually like the initial response more than the lengthier day two response, which we just witnessed. I liked the initial response better because although it didn't touch all the important bases. For example, one thing that was not done in his address last night on the plane was a full recognition of the harm that people who experience discrimination and bigotry would withdraw from that image. And he did that in large portions today, but he didn't do it last night, and I do think it was an oversight. But what I liked about last night was that it was an unqualified, uncontextualized apology. There was no bullshit. There was none of this, like, you know, if you just, but what you need to know about me then was this was what I was going through. None of that crap. No excuses. And my rule for political apologies is just the same rule as for personal apologies, is if you're going to make an apology and have anyone take it seriously, you just have to say, I'm sorry. And that's the part that you stop at. Like, I'm sorry, but I did it because no one gives a shit. So I thought that was pretty good. I thought that Singh was outstandingly, like by a wide margin, the most affecting and the most interesting and the most important person to watch last night. Obviously, he's the first visible minority leader we've ever had in the country. This issue is going to have a resonance with him. Personally, that's unlike anything else. And he's going to have an authority to speak to it, unlike anyone else who's ever held a leadership position in the country. And I thought that he was personal. By making the choice to not be political, he was the most politically effective of all the leaders by a wide margin. He didn't talk about what it meant to him. He didn't talk about what it meant for Trudeau. He didn't talk about what it meant for the fucking election. He talked about what it meant for people that have experienced discrimination. I thought that was something to watch and something
Well, he had
impressive.
Two different texts. He had two different texts.
Right.
His first, we're talking about Singh now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And his first comment was Jenny's comment. This proves Trudeau is a phony. Trudeau is one thing in public and one thing in private, and the Grassy Narrows fundraising video proves it.
Right.
And then he did that long form video, which was about racism and systemic racism in our society.
But
and
that's because
feel.
He had not seen the image. So when he spoke, one of the things he said is when he gave his first comment, he had not seen the picture. So he had been told about the pictures. He made his statement, and then he was shown the pictures and was compelled to speak about it, because in his book that was released a couple months ago, he spoke about growing up, and
yeah.
He and his brothers and his friends, you know, would be walking to school, and they would have, you know, their turbans pulled off, and they'd be taunted and so he's actually, to Scott's point, he's experienced it. So in seeing the pictures and seeing that visual, that is why he went out and made the second statement that he did last night.
We talked in our last podcast about what a good first week he had, and
yes.
How he had the best first week of anybody, right? And then, not to be insensitive, this is a real political opportunity for him. So they could be on quite a run, the NDP.
That's what I think. But I think this is, so when we talk about how big a deal is this, I think the obvious answer is that it could be an enormously big deal for Singh and the NDP.
It's the most amazing in to this election he could ever have had.
Absolutely. And again, we don't want to sound, you know, crass and opportunistic about something that, you know, for many people is enormously hurtful. But this issue gives him a place of authority that it's hard to imagine anything else giving him the same voice on it. But I can isolate the thing he did last night that I like most. And he was asked on a couple of occasions to pronounce judgment on Justin Trudeau, and he declined to do it. And I thought that was note perfect. He just said, you know what, we'll let people do that, right? I will talk to you about the experience I've had. I'll talk to you about the experience of people I know have had. I'm not going to label them. And I thought that when, just moving to the conservatives, when Scheer came out, the contrast was enormous. Now, I don't know. I'd like to pretend I'm the smartest guy in the room. I'm not. I don't know which way will work, but I know this. The two approaches adopted by the NDP and the Conservatives could not have been more different. So he says, I'm going to decline to rule on the actions of Justin Trudeau. That was the opposite of what Scheer did. Scheer came out, he said, it was racist, he's a liar, this is no good, the guy's unfit. And I thought, wow, that seems too hard-edged to me. Like, I think, you know,
and who's he to make that judgment? He doesn't have the moral standing with Canadians
well,
to make that judgment.
It was particularly hard to take. I mean, he didn't have the foreknowledge of what Singh would do, but I thought that it felt jarring after Singh declined and argued and gave you an argument as to why he wasn't going to make a personal judgment on it, and then Scheer does have a personal judgment on it. And I just think, I mean, maybe it'll turn out to be right. Maybe it'll drive the label and the accusation on Trudeau, and that carries the day. But to me, it felt like you were saying to Canadians, I want you to determine that he's a racist and that he's a liar and that his judgment is flawed and he's unfit. And I worry if I was a conservative, I'd worry, am I too excited? Because I think this gives me the opportunity to have people see Trudeau the way I always have. And I hope and believe that this time they'll see him the way I've always wanted them to see him. And you got to be careful. Don't believe your own bullshit. Don't get baffled by it.
I have to believe that the Scheer people were using this to break up the Liberal vote, maybe help the NDP and suppress Liberal vote, rather than to grow their own. Because the attack that to call Trudeau a racist, A, I don't believe that most people in Canada are going to come to the view that he is a racist. And second of all, if you did, you're unlikely to move to the Conservative Party as your alternative.
Well, I don't think that Justin Trudeau is a racist. I think, as I said before, I think he's a hypocrite. But I don't think he's racist. That being said, last night Justin Trudeau went out in his on the plane and when asked, you know, is what you did racist? He said, yes, it was. Yeah. And afterwards, it wasn't just once, it was twice and it was three times. And today, he couldn't answer how many times he had done it. So this speaks to the judgment of a G7 leader to Canada's prime minister. We're making headlines around the world. So this is more, what is the judgment of this guy?
Sorry to interrupt. I think that's exactly the wrong argument to make. I know Scheer made that last night. He lacks judgment. It's unfit. This demonstrates that. I think that's a weak argument. The guy's been a party leader for years. He's been the prime minister for 4 years. And I think that this argument has been submitted to the Canadian people before, that he lacks a judgment, that he's not qualified for it. And I think people have declared on that. And I wouldn't go back to that. I don't think that's the most open flank that Trudeau was exposed after this incident. And I just don't know why you would say, so what this proves is that he lacks a judgment. It's kind of a way of saying, see, I was right all along, Canadians. Now, finally, knuckle under and admit I was right. And I think that's the wrong attack for the Conservatives.
One of the big questions everybody's asking right now is, how did everybody miss this?
Wow, eh?
Until now. Jason Lettier, a Conservative activist, had a tweet last night I loved so much. He said, to all of the opposition research teams for the 2013 Liberal Leadership Campaign, to the Conservative and NDP opposition research teams in the 2015 election, and to all members of the national media, you're fired.
Yes.
So I'd like to talk about that, but I'd also like to start, Scott, by talking in the context of how destabilizing is it for the Liberal war room and the Liberal campaign generally that they found this out through the media?
Oh, I think it's pretty destabilizing. I think in ways that we won't know and won't know probably for years when we finally get people to the bottom of a bottle of wine and they're willing to really tell the true story, which will probably take them some time before they have that comfort level and want to reconcile themselves to it. So immediately the war room in the Liberal Party is, and Jenny I think was making this point earlier, they're on ice. I mean, it's not like they can issue a press release tomorrow saying like, hey, you know, it turns out that the Conservative candidate in Timmins is no good. You know what? Sorry, gone. And of course, what happens in a situation like this, and this is why it is so destabilizing, and we've been through this, David, when you're under attack in that way and your integrity and the stakes are that high, when your integrity is at stake and the stakes are that high, it retreats to 4 or 5 most senior people in the campaign. So a bunch of things that people listening don't know happen, right? So suddenly the campaign is by definition leadershipless because all the leader themselves takes the morning off. All the senior staff, the 4, 5, 6 most important people that are running the campaign and from whom everyone has taken their cues, they got to go into a room and they're locked up and they're having an argument. They're trying to get to the bottom of this and figure their way forward. So all of that happens. And you have to say to somebody at the second tier, you got to like just keep the troops happy, right? Meanwhile, you got candidates calling. You got members of parliament calling. You've got important people from across the country calling. You got to take those calls. You can't blow those people off. The time crunch, the pressure crunch, figuring out what's the right choice and what's the right thing to do, it's enormously destabilizing. And any notion that you were just going to, all right, we did this last night, so now we're going to start today and have an announcement about capital cost allowance in Peterborough, and maybe we'll make a nod to what happened. Forget it. That's off the table. So you shake up the campaign team. You basically mothball the war room. You destabilize the leader and you destabilize the senior ranks of the campaign team. It's an enormously disruptive event.
Jenny?
And no, I agree. I have nothing more to add to that. And to Scott's point, that who actually suffers the most are the people on the ground, are the candidates, their campaign managers, the activists. And right now, and those are the last people that people are thinking about, because to Scott's point, everyone's holed up in a room and they're on the phone with the bus or they're on the phone with the plane. And so right now, the Liberals, what they should be doing and what every campaign would do in this situation or should be doing is getting on the phone with candidates, getting on the phone with caucus members, with volunteers, and just kind of talking them through. This is going to be okay. We've got 32 days left. Even if you don't think it's okay, the last thing you want to do is make people have people think that you're going to lose, and more importantly, lose them. So if there is a vacuum where they don't hear from the war room, if they don't hear from someone that things are going to be okay or this is the plan forward, then you essentially have rogue campaigns across the country, and that's when all of a sudden, you know, statements start coming out and what have you. So this is a very dangerous time for any campaign in the first 48 hours of like a major crisis.
So, Jenny, I put you on the spot again. You said that you thought Trudeau was weaker today than he was yesterday.
Yes.
In this race. Who is the beneficiary of that primarily?
I don't know who that is. I think he's weak. I think he's weaker now. I think he's thrown off his game. I think their team is thrown off their game. There's nothing. It's kind of like getting a speeding ticket and then for the next, you know, 2 hours you're driving like a couple kilometers under the speed limit because you're afraid of getting one again. So I think he's weak. I'm not sure who the recipient is, and I'm not sure how long it will last. Like, to everyone's point, there is almost a month left in this campaign. How they move forward, how the other parties move forward, will be very telling.
So, Scott, one of the critical strategic questions that anybody faces in a crisis like this is, when is the point at which I can stop apologizing and start to message proactively again? And you can't rush that pivot point to suit your own agenda. You have to wait until it naturally occurs. When do you think that will be?
The day after tomorrow. In my view, you have to let the weekend wash some of this through. And I think that tomorrow should be dedicated. Let me take one step back. I think that today, last night and today, were the first and necessary steps. An acknowledgement of the problem, an acknowledgement of the failure, a full-throated apology, some elaboration as to how this happened and what the underlying factors are. That's step number one. Step number two, and I think this is really, really important, is you can't rush from apology to resurrection. I think that people, particularly with Trudeau, because they've seen him take some shots in the past, are looking to see that he suffers a consequence. I think that people want to know that a penalty has been paid. And so if the penalty isn't inherently and automatically that he's not reelected on the 21st, I think one of the challenges for the Liberal campaign is, how do you demonstrate to the public who are upset by this, substantively, politically, whether they think it's the issue of racism, whether they think it's the issue of hypocrisy, how do you demonstrate to those upset voters that he not only gets it, but that he is paying some kind of consequence? And I think that that means that tomorrow, Friday, must be dedicated to meeting with people and taking one-on-one interviews where you get the shit beat out of you, and people witness the prime minister of the country getting the shit beat out of you. You and I have been in rooms with prime ministers and political leaders where they've been under fire and they've had to apologize, and you're talking with them and they're like, well, how long do I have to fucking grovel? And the answer is, you have to fucking grovel more. And I think that tomorrow is going to have to be full grovel, and I think people are going to have to see the prime minister knocked up, bruised up, and some dirt thrown on him. I think you're really going to have to see him in a way that they haven't looked at him before they will, on the weekend, release him back to something that looks like normal campaign mode. And if you rush that step, I think you could pay a real consequence and undo whatever value of the apology, because people will say, well, see, that was just talk. You don't really get it. You don't really regret it. You just mouthed the words. It was phonetic. You don't feel it. And now you want absolution. I think he's got to pay penance before he gets absolution.
Now, what happens if there are more incidents that come out? Because he was
such
asked,
a good question.
He was asked several times in the press conference today by the media, is it only these three times? You said last night it was two. He said he couldn't remember the third time, and he couldn't answer if there was more. So what's going to happen if, you know, you start the interviews where you're getting the shit pounded out of you, and then all of a sudden there's another picture, there's another tape, there's another person that comes out and says, well, I was at a party in 1995 and Justin Trudeau showed up there.
At this point, why does the number matter? Let's say in a worst case scenario for the Liberals, it emerged that this was a regular party trick that he liked to do. And so he's done it a number of times. Once, seven, what does it matter?
That's such an interesting question because to me, and again, like I'm as white as a kitchen sink. So, you know, there are aspects of this that I don't get and I don't feel. But I think there's two really different answers to that, and I don't know which one is most real. One answer is, you know what, it's happened three times, so if it happens seven times, people say it's a variation on the same theme, it's the same sin. On the other hand, if it's seven times, people might say, well, my God, this is such a repetitive habit that it speaks to something more fundamental in the character. And I don't know which way that breaks. So I guess all I could say is that if I'm working for the Liberals, I am praying to goodness that there are no more examples. We know there's one other videotape, right? We know that there's a videotape of him in high school, which he talked about, the Deo, the Harry Belafonte one, right?
Well, we just heard, what I heard last night was there was a tape. It could have been the tape that was on Global. Like there could just be one tape. And
I thought the Deo thing was referring to the picture that was already out there.
Maybe I misunderstood. I was under the impression that there was a tape. I mean,
it's called the Banana Boat Song.
The Banana Boat Song. Yeah. I mean, my immediate thought last night was get that tape out now. Like if I was running for the Liberals, get that tape out this second. Because if it waits 3 days, you got the phenomenon you're talking about, Jenny.
Well, and I just think if there's more tapes that come out, like there was points in his press conference, and I don't want to get into to details, but this is when you have longer press conferences where people start talking. He originally had said last night and today, I never thought, I didn't realize what I was doing. I didn't realize how hurtful it was. That's probably the case. But then when asked, why didn't you release this to the Liberal Party of Canada when you ran in 2008? Why didn't you, you know, tell people in 2013 when you were running for leader? He said, well, I just didn't want to talk about it. I thought it would go away. I was so embarrassed and I knew it was wrong. So I think that if more examples come out and issues he's going to have to deal with, exactly what is it? Like it's one or the other, or maybe he says it's both. I was doing it. I realized it was wrong. It's just the more he's talking about this and the more it's just...
His explanations got a little tangled in the news conference.
The longer that went on,
yes,
I would say the less value there was in being in front of the cameras for him.
Yes.
For sure. Jenny, if you were running... Well, first of all, there's actually another question I wanted to ask you, which is people have been asking me this today. And let's say Mr. Trudeau disclosed to his senior people in 2016 these events. Would you have put them out in advance or would you have just hoped it never emerged?
Listen, it's easy to second guess. I probably, if I was Justin, if I thought these things were always going to come out. There's the yearbook photo, and to be fair to all of the opposition researchers, and I'm not like from your party to mine to the media, who would have thought, like the yearbook was his, he was a teacher in the yearbook. It wasn't his own high school yearbook, although I think that one picture was. I think that probably it would have been wise for them to release that this had happened, but it doesn't seem that his people, the team around him knew. This seemed to be something that...
No, they seemed to be scrambling.
They seemed... That was not a campaign that was like, we're prepared for this and we're going to answer. That was a campaign that was like entirely scrambling yesterday.
100%.
Yeah.
So you're running the Conservative campaign in this election. How do you now capitalize on this?
I don't know if there's a way to capitalize on it. I think that at this point, it's not about any other party. This is about Justin Trudeau. This is not about anything else. This is about Trudeau. I think that Jagmeet Singh is in a position to talk about the issue in a way that, like as Scott said, that's unique from other political leaders or politicians because he's faced racism and discrimination in Canada while he was growing up. If I'm running the Conservative campaign, I'm letting Justin Trudeau explain you know, why he didn't release that, these video, why he didn't make it known. And I'm going ahead with my campaign, but I don't think you're going to see, you know, I don't think you're going to see parties jump on this with ads or pronouncements. And I don't think they should. This is for Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party to answer.
So you don't imagine that this would show up in a Conservative ad that demonstrated their point about his hypocrisy that they...
Well, I'm not on the campaign right. team, but
but you wouldn't do it.
But I think where parties are right now, I think that Andrew Scheer and others need to comment on it because it is the news of the day. No one is talking about anything else. But I think political parties have to be very careful in terms of not crossing the line or jumping the shark on this issue.
You think it's possible that this campaign could still become a policy-based policy choice campaign, or are we locked now into a leader's frame?
I don't think it was ever going to be a policy-centric campaign. I think the campaigns have been out releasing policy, but there's been almost zero interest in it. In any of our, like, you know, this is our fourth podcast that we've talked about. It's been very little on policy. I do media every day like you guys do, and that has not seemed to be very substantive. So I'm not sure it ever was going to be. It seems to be more of a leader-centric, driven political campaign.
Right.
What's interesting about that question is that if you had told the Liberals in advance of the campaign that the election would turn on leadership and values, they would have said, thanks, we'll take it.
Yeah.
But now what you're contemplating is a situation where the election will turn on those questions, but it might be to the vulnerability of the Liberals. One of the reasons that I think that—
They're going to have to make this election about something different and more important, aren't they?
Perhaps. One of the things that we never talk about, I mean, I shouldn't say that. People do talk about it, I suppose. But we underestimate the resilience of the Trudeau brand, right? We really do. And I don't think that it's— His performance this afternoon was flawless. I thought there were all sorts of blemishes, particularly as it went on. And I don't think the guy's time as prime minister has been unblemished by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that people consistently underestimate the resilience of his brand. And I think that if this election turns on leadership and values, he'll win.
I don't think people underestimate the resilience of his brand.
It's just that I hear from conservatives, they want people to hate him as much as they hate him. And it just feels, and I know that, and liberals used to feel the same way about Harper. So that's not a character assassination.
No, listen, and I think that's a weakness with certain people within my party is that they truly believe that, you know, he's as big a lightweight as what they want him to believe, but he's not. But the fact of the matter is it goes to what I was saying in terms of hypocrisy. I think the Trudeau brand is strong, but it's the hypocrisy of saying that you're standing up for Aboriginal Canadians, yet kicking an Aboriginal woman out of your caucus, your cabinet, because they didn't do what you wanted. It's saying you're the first feminist prime minister, but yet, you know, having stories out there that you've groped women. And even that picture that was released last night from the yearbook, creepily had his hands very close between a woman's neck and her cleavage. So I believe the Trudeau brand is resilient, but I do believe that people are seeing the hypocrisy for what it is.
You know, critics always say, I just want to say one thing, because, you know, critics always say that, just one thing. I mean, I haven't said a single damn thing this whole time, Dave. Would you give me a second? But people always say, well, you know, Trudeau holds himself to a different standard than he holds others. I think one of the interesting questions that this election is going to now inevitably settle is whether, in fact, Canadians hold Trudeau to a different standard than they hold others. And I have a weird feeling they do.
Well, it's interesting, Scott. I mean, when he first emerged on the leadership scene in 2012, 2013, and 2014, before he actually got into it, there were, people were remarkably, I'd never seen this with a politician before. People were protective of him.
Yeah.
And they were defensive about him. And they wanted him to have a chance to succeed. They were kind of rooting for him to succeed. Didn't know if he would. Didn't know if he would emerge at that point as somebody that could lead the country. But they wanted to see if he could, and they were protective of that opportunity for him. I don't really know if that exists anymore after 4 years of being the prime minister, whether that same protectiveness exists.
Okay, so there, I think you've just crystallized it. That's what I think is more resilient than people think. I think we are going to witness that phenomenon in the next few days and throughout this campaign. And that quality, which is unique and that not all politicians can claim, I think there's a resilience to that. I think we're already starting to see people come to the fore and say, you know what, gosh, man, I don't want to see him fail. I want to see him succeed.
All right. Well, everybody with a telephone book and a telephone is going to be polling between now and our next episode on Tuesday. So we'll have lots of evidence of what the impact of this is by the next time we reconvene. And we will be reconvening at our regular time next Tuesday. Thank you both for coming in on short notice to do this. And thank you to our listeners for putting up with us for yet another Hurly Burly episode. Till next time. Thank you for listening. We will be back next Tuesday at our regular time slot with Jenny and Scott to look at what's happened in the week in politics and the campaign. Look in the meantime for our advertising panel of David Rosenberg and Dennis Matthews to look at what is sure to be a new round of advertising released by the parties in the next few days. And thank you once again for listening. If you have an opportunity, go to iTunes and give us a rating and a review, or say something positive about us on social media. The audience for this show is building dramatically, and we want to get as many people to listen to it as possible. This episode of the Hurly Burly was recorded at the Orange Lounge on Queen Street West in Toronto and was produced and engineered by Anthony Yurdanoff.